Welcome to the Because Church Suite podcast. We believe innovation is a part of the solution to alleviating poverty. So we're going to be talking to some pretty interesting people from all over the world doing some pretty innovative things. Our hope is that the conversations will inspire you to creatively pursue being the church where you live and where you may go. The content of each episode is geared towards our Church Suite partners, but could be helpful to anyone a part of the church, and especially those of you leading or pastoring. If you'd like to partner with us through our VBS mission project, our youth ministry series called Shoebox, by distributing the shoe that grows through a trip or in your church's efforts with Operation Christmas Child, please let us know by reaching out at becauseinternational.org. For now, enjoy this podcast episode and remember that small things can make a big difference. Well, Grayson Kilgore, welcome to the Because Church Suite podcast.
Thank you. Good to be here.
It is so good to be with you. I'm sitting in the same room with you. I've talked with you over the phone because you used to live in
Salem, Oregon.
And you moved to Nampa, Idaho, where I live.
Yeah.
I'm going to ask you some warm-up questions just to get us started. You and I have already been going. I wish I'd already started the recording.
All the good stuff's done.
It's
downhill
all
from here.
That's right. But you know what? We can run faster downhill. And so that's going to be fine. So let me get going with my first responder questions. And see what happens.
Sounds good.
Rain or snow?
Ooh, snow.
Why?
Why?
Yeah, give me why.
Let's see. Snow is more fun. I'm a person that chooses fun over most things. So you can slide around in the snow, which I love. My dog loves the snow more. And from a practical perspective, snow doesn't break down my like outerwear and like outdoor gear as quickly as rain does.
Oh.
I thought about this a lot.
And you like to snowshoe too, right?
Yeah.
Okay. I like to snowshoe. Mission trip.
That's a question?
That's a first responder. Like, what's the first thing you think of?
Mission trip. I immediately think of a mission trip that I was a part of leading when I was on the ORPAC district. I was a part of a crew that built a bathroom in Tecate, Mexico. So that was cool. As a foreman of a framing crew, having never been a foreman before, so that was an interesting process.
Okay, so a couple things there. ORPAC is Oregon Pacific
District.
Which was with the Church of the Nazarene,
which
you and I are both part of.
Yeah.
Both pastors in the Church of the Nazarene.
Yes, that's true.
And if you're in Tecate, Mexico, and you're building a house, and you're on a framing team, were you working with the Mormon Ministries?
No.
Was it a different organization?
It was a mission trip that the ORPAC district has done for like a billion years.
Okay.
So it's something that's like the ORPAC district organizes with the youth in that district.
Was Mark Pounds there?
Mark Pounds is always there.
We both know Mark Pounds. I should have added that to my questions.
Yes.
Okay. Next one. Cat or dog?
Dog. Easy.
And why?
Dogs are the best. I've never liked... Actually, I had a cat once. It was okay, but... No, dogs are good. Dogs want to play. Dogs are active. They're fun. Cats just want you to serve them.
It's true. I have two cats. There's a bit of an identity issue who's in charge here. Yeah.
Although I have a dog that's a cat. So it's really
I've met your dog. It doesn't look like a cat.
No, but the way like he at first you think he is there to love you, and that's why he's always there, but it's not true. He's always there for you to love him. So in that way, he's a dog with a cat personality.
Okay. Now, because I've met your dog, we need to share with people just a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
Describe what your dog looks like, and then tell us your dog's name and why.
Okay. So my dog is a golden doodle. So half poodle, half golden retriever. The best way to describe him, he is like a living teddy bear is what he looks like. Super curly. He actually smiles, like he legitimately straight up smiles at people. And he can't walk in a straight line. He gets so excited, his whole body like wiggles as he moves. And when he was young, he was really timid, so we named him Tantor, which is the name of the elephant, the timid elephant off of Tarzan.
Right. Yeah. Now, is this like original Tarzan or Tarzan the animated? Or
I think it's both. I think it's from the actual Legend of Tarzan novel. And then it was taken over to the Disney movie.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Did you read the book? Have you read the novel?
No.
But how were you introduced to the name? Was it the Disney movie?
It was the Disney movie.
Okay.
But my wife, who's smarter than me and better than me in every way, knows the novel.
Good man.
Knows that.
Good man.
It's from Tarzan. Yeah.
Tantor.
Yes.
One of the best pet names I've ever heard.
It's good. It's really good.
Next first responder question. These are supposed to be really quick, but I always make them take way longer. Okay. It'll be like 15 minutes. No, it's not your fault. It's my fault. It'll be like 15 minutes of this podcast is the first responder questions to answer in 10 seconds or less. Okay, the next one is snacks.
Chocolate. Like, I can eat healthy all day long, but my meals have to end with chocolate.
Do they?
Yeah.
Do you eat dark chocolate, milk chocolate?
Usually milk chocolate. I'm like that right in the middle zone, but...
Man, okay. Yeah. Fly or drive?
Ooh. Flying is faster. I like flying. Depends on what we're doing. If I'm traveling with my family, I like driving because we stop along the way, we get out and we hike, we do stuff like that. If I'm traveling to a race, I want to fly so I can get set up, stretch out my legs and things like that.
Capitalize on the time.
Yeah.
Okay. Sink or swim?
I sink.
Okay. I don't know why you're laughing. It's just a general question.
All right. But it's like, my mind goes to like, what would I prefer to do? And it's obviously swim, but what do? I sink.
Okay.
Yeah. I've tried often to swim, but yeah. I was a swim lesson teacher, which is ironic.
Really?
Yeah.
Just stay in the shallow end?
Yeah, I mostly worked with the young kids. You just take them off the edge of the pool, dunk them underwater, put them back on the edge of the pool. Good job!
Give them ribbon.
Yep, that's right.
Next one. Technology.
I'm bad at this. And you know that.
Says the guy that I just said, hey, when's the last time you updated your iPhone software?
Yeah, almost never. Yeah.
Okay. Pizza or pasta?
Pizza, for sure. I make a homemade pizza that my wife thinks is incredible. She thinks it's the best pizza in the world. It's terrible. It's really not good. But she, like, for some reason, she thinks it's the best, so.
We make a homemade pizza. We should, like, let me know when you're making yours and we'll make ours and then we'll trade it and we'll.
Yeah.
I don't know.
You'll be disappointed.
Do you think so?
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe she's just being nice to you. Here's the last one. Last first responder question. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Last question. This question is the last question. Sorry. Going into Bible quizzing mode.
Oh, no.
Annoying.
Styrofoam.
Okay. Please do tell.
I don't like styrofoam. I can't explain to what extent because I don't want people to know all that information, but I hate the sound of styrofoam. Like, touching it, hearing it, cutting it. You ever seen someone cut open styrofoam?
Yeah.
Oh, yep. That's the most annoying thing on the face of the earth.
I know what you're talking about. And then all the little pieces that go everywhere and you try to contain it and it just like, it just like propagates.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think I'm safe enough in this environment that I'm working now to share this story, but when I was youth pastor at South Salem Church of the Nazarene, it was a great, wonderful place, wonderful youth group. But I told the students that I hated styrofoam and that I hated touching it. So about four times a year, they would fill my entire office with styrofoam. And it would be like peanuts, packing styrofoam. But they'd even shred it until the like individual balls of styrofoam and stick it in like my desk
that
and
is
in
messed my drawers up, dude.
And in my couch, just everywhere. To the point where I could clean all day and still not get all the styrofoam out of
this. Dude, okay, I'm annoyed by this too. I totally get it. But now you're a resident director on a college campus.
Right.
And as an RA one time, I came back to my room filled with balloons.
Yes.
It takes a lot of dedication.
It does.
I mean, I think this is the environment where if this gets out...
It's bad news. Except I am, well, myself and the campus security team, the only individual that has a key to my office. So... My office is safe in this location.
Okay. Well, I don't want to compromise that in any way.
Yeah, that'd be good.
Sweet. Is it like a kryptonite for you?
Styrofoam?
Social, like emotional kryptonite.
What's that? There's that movie Bolt. You know what I'm talking about?
The little dog?
With a little dog.
Yeah.
That
animated show.
Yeah, styrofoam is like his kryptonite.
Yeah.
Yeah. For me, no. But that's what came to my mind. Is that like that movie that no one remembers about the dog that pretended. Yeah.
Okay, that's good. Well, dude, we're warmed up. So let me give just a little... What's that?
I agree.
Okay, let me give just a little bit of an introduction of why Grayson? Why would I want to interview
Okay. Grayson Kilgore, besides your name is amazing for so many things in life. Like you, it could have belonged to the Batman saga. I feel like Grayson Kilgore. But I think you're a great fit to interview for the Because Church Suite podcast. One, because I want to interview you and I'm the one that does the podcast. But two, because we're all about how innovation can help overcome poverty. And I think any type of innovation you talk about with someone can ignite ideas of imagination and just get the creative juices flowing. So I think you're an innovative young leader and you inspire me. So I'm just going to put you on the spot and tell you that.
Okay.
Maybe you're not blushing, so I'll try harder. But you and I have talked about a holistic health perspective on being a follower and disciple of Christ. And I know that you and your wife are into some pretty amazing things in life. And I think you're just a great person to share that story with. And this month, I'm putting an emphasis on the body. So last month we did mind and mindfulness.
Okay.
And this month is how as Christ followers, how as church leaders, how should we be thinking about being holistic people?
Yeah.
And so you and I are going to weave in and out of some of that. And I know that you're passionate about that.
Yeah.
You know, not the real reason, because I count you as one of my friends, but that I'm really excited for this podcast today is because you're part of the Spartan Race Pro Team.
Yeah.
And I am a Spartan Race wannabe. and I get to live in your shadow a little bit. And I think that that's a lot of fun. So here's a question that I didn't give you ahead of time, but I'm curious about this. And then we'll get into all the rest of this.
Yeah.
The last time I was working out with you on Wednesday morning, mm-hmm. I think it was this last time we talked about this, and you were talking about the first time you remember like meeting me.
Mm-hmm.
When was that? Where were we at in life?
Yeah, I don't know if you remember this actually, but the first time I met you was, I think I was a sixth grader, and you were a youth pastor on the Intermountain Nazarene District. And so you've been a youth pastor here in this district for a while, it seemed. And I grew up on this district going to church camps in Cascade at Trinity Pine. So that's my probably first memory of knowing who you were. And, you know, I from a young age, I had actually felt called into ministry, specifically youth ministry. And so and even in sixth grade, I was considering pastoral ministry and pastoral leadership. When you see someone doing the job that you think you might do, you just watch those people. So as a sixth grader, I was always watching you and a handful of other youth pastors in the area. Like, how do you interact with people? How do you lead people? How do you create fun out of thin air? Things like that. So that's kind of my first...
Styrofoam, that's the answer.
Styrofoam! That's the opposite of fun. But yeah, I think that's my first memory is at Trinity Pines Church Camp.
That's cool, man.
Yeah.
Well, and I told you the other day that you're mentoring me, you know.
Yeah.
And I think that that's to me that's just fun. Like when you realize that somebody has, you don't even think about it, but people are watching you for example, both good and bad, and people glean different things. But it doesn't always mean that people have to be. You have to be the younger person and the older person, and they're the mentor. Right. You can be a mentor to me. You are a mentor to me. Right now. And it's another reason I wanted to interview you and to share that perspective and what my mentors have taught me about being reverse mentored by people younger than us. So the things that we're talking about, to me, all fall within that category.
Right.
But, okay. We've got a few different places we could go next with our questions. And I'm kind of jumping around here. But you're married.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about that, whatever you're comfortable with, and if it's okay, like, how you guys met.
Yeah. So we met, my wife's name is Morgan, we met here at NNU, where I currently work, Northwest Nazarene University, and where we are currently sitting, and where I currently live. So a lot of my life has taken place on this campus. So we both met, and I guess we didn't really... You know, you kind of at a school this small, you kind of meet everybody initially, but we didn't start getting to know each other until we were on the track team together. And it's kind of interesting the way that she join the track team because I was recruited to join the track team from high school. But one day I was out walking near the track with my head track coach, and my wife Morgan was out just working out on her own, running laps around the track. And the coach says, "Grayson, who is that?" And I said, "That's Morgan." And he said, "Give her my email. Tell her to come talk to me." And so she did. She went and talked to him, and then he brought her onto the team. And so we got to spend a lot of time together, but she went from being a walk-on to NNU's track team to her senior year setting the 4x400-meter women's school record.
Wow. So
her story is pretty incredible just in that alone. I think it demonstrates her drive and her passion and the way that she works super hard. So it was cool. It was cool meeting her and spending time with her through track and field. We dated in college and actually got married before our senior year of college. I know not everyone likes that idea, especially the funny thing is when parents of my current students hear that story, they get nervous because they go, "Oh, I don't want our kids to get married in college."
You mean as college students?
Yeah. So when a college student's parents hear that I got married in college, they get nervous that I'm going to encourage their kids, like, "Oh, everyone should get married in college."
But, well, it used to be when people turned 18, they became adults.
Right.
And so now parents are going, "No, they're still going to be on my insurance. I'm still going to be paying for their cell phone. And now there's going to be two of them."
Right.
Well, that's not fair to everybody, but it happens.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. But it worked out. It worked out really well for us, honestly. I wouldn't go back. I wouldn't change anything. We got married. We were here for our senior year, and then it worked out great because immediately after we graduated, we drove off to Salem, Oregon, where I started as a youth pastor, and she started her graduate work as a physical therapist. So getting married a year before we graduated college, brilliant, I thought. It worked out really well.
Yeah, it seems like it's working great for you, man. Yeah.
So we've been married for coming up on 7 years in June. So
and you're how old?
I'm going to be 28 in March.
So I was 21 when I got married.
There you go. See? Ton of fun.
It happens.
Yeah.
It happens.
Yeah.
Except we're a little bit farther along than... How many years is it? 7?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, we got a few more.
Yeah. Can I guess?
Yeah, sure. Go ahead.
Wait, first I'm going to guess how old you are.
Okay.
Because I don't know that.
Yeah. And then really? You don't know how old I am?
And then I'm going to guess.
I hope you're surprised.
And then I'm going to guess how long you've been married. I'm going to guess you are 42.
That was spot on.
Really?
Almost 43.
Almost 43. Dang, mm-hmm. That's good work.
Good guess.
So I'm going to guess you've been married. You already told me you got married when you're 21. So now I have to do math in public.
You got to do math,
which is one of my rules. I don't ever do math in
online,
public.
Online digital public podcast. Do math.
Yep.
Make it easy for you.
What is it?
So we were married in 98.
Okay.
And now it's 2020.
There you go.
Let's see. 22. 22 years.
Easy. There you go.
And we have a sophomore in college here.
Now that's crazy.
Yeah, I know.
That's a whole nother podcast.
Yeah, gotta keep those freshman boys away from her. She does a good job of that on her own. She can beat him off with a stick, so that's fine. No. You kind of got into it a little bit, but you started talking about your ministry journey.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I'm was called into ministry and still live into that in my life in lots mm-hmm. of different ways, maybe not traditional pastoral ministry.
Yeah.
And in some ways you and I have talked about some similarities, mm-hmm. different places in life, but some similarities with that. And I don't think that ministry is like the only thing in our life or when we're called to the church and to be pastors, that like that's our only identity type thing. And I know that you get that. So I don't want to just really niche that, but I want to ask you about your journey from going to Salem and being a youth pastor to this point today, and just anything about that that you'd like to share, and then we can pick it up from there.
Yeah, I would like to share about that journey. So, you know, when I was like I said, when I was in middle school, I felt called into youth ministry. Now I'm not a pastor in a traditional sense. I still feel called to youth ministry.
Yeah.
So, you know, I was a pastor in Salem for 4 years, and I honestly loved every minute of that. I thought it was incredible to serve in the church. I thought it was incredible to serve young people and families in that way. But there was a point where for me, and I'm not saying this is how it should be for everybody, but for me, I felt like my personality would be best used figuring out how to step outside of the walls of the church and serve in the community. And doing that using some of the gifts and the knowledge that I have. So, you know, when I was working at South Salem, I felt that I could partner with Fellowship of Christian Athletes, which is an organization I had been a part of in high school and college. And what I wanted to do was, you know, figure out how we can serve people through some athletic elements and specifically helping young people grow mentally, physically, spiritually, as they recognize their need for kind of their whole body to be a part of their relationship with God. I don't know if that makes sense. I don't know if I explained that very well. So I worked with FCA.
Who they are as a whole person. It's not just spiritual. It's not just church life. It's like your whole life integrated into who are you as a follower of Christ.
Right.
Is that fair?
Right. Absolutely. That's a great way to sum that up. So I worked with FCA in Salem for a year, and that was phenomenal. And there's some things going on at that time, some of it personal, some of it family related, to where, you know, we unfortunately moved out of Salem after only a year of doing that job. But in that process of working with people outside of the youth group setting, I had also worked a couple part-time jobs of working at a care facility, for young adults, and just kind of recognize how fun it was to be in a slow-paced job where your entire purpose is just to be really, really present to people.
When you say care facility, for young adults, of care facility?
Yeah. So this was in Salem, Oregon, or I guess in Oregon in general, there's a hospice care system for anybody with developmental delays or disabilities of any kind, where someone with a certified nurse, a registered nurse, could open their home as a care facility for people in smaller groups, like 5 to 7 people.
Hmm.
And so I was hired on part-time in a care facility. It's actually a hobby farm, is a blueberry farm.
That's interesting.
And so I worked there with a few clients, just doing activities around the farm, you know, just whatever clients wanted to do that day. We built birdhouses. We had a lot of fun. And, so I just kind of learned how to be present and learn the joy of connecting with people on a very, very one-on-one basis. And it's something that I've learned to describe as a ministry of availability.
Hmm.
And as soon as I experienced that in that setting, I felt like this like winding path of how am I going to serve people became very clear, as I thought, like residential ministry, residential life is a place where I could see myself fitting really well. And I felt like God was confirming that. So my wife and I talked about it. She was in transition in her job as well. There was reasons why we felt like it was a good time for us to move back and be closer to family. So, you know, I started, you know, reaching out and connecting and found that there's a job open in the freshman guys dorm here at NNU. And thought it would be a great fit. Applied and got this job. So I've been at it for about 5 months now, and I absolutely love it. It's just honestly the best and coolest thing a person can do. And I've been talking on this subject a lot, but I'll just tell you where I'm at now, in terms of serving people and connecting with people, and helping people grow in their relationship with God is, we live in a world that's incredibly fast paced, especially America, where everything has deadlines, everything has structure, everything is moving so fast. Both parents and a household are working a ton, and time is the thing that we seem to have the least of, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's really, really cool in this culture that we're living in. There's some of us here on this campus that have a designated job to move slowly, listen slowly, and be incredibly present. My biggest asset right now in this job is time, where if someone needs my time, they can have it because it's set aside.
It's your job
specifically
to do that.
For that. Yeah. And it's a beautiful thing. I absolutely love it. So ministry of availability. That's what it feels like.
I wrote that down, man. That's good.
Yeah. It's really fun.
I don't often like when I'm thinking about reaching out to you or we're going to do one of these Wednesday morning workouts or whatever, I'm not like, yeah, Grayson's a really slow person. I don't think of you that way. But I just really respect and admire the way that you think about that slowing down. You know, it's like doing the slow food, doing the, you know, the home cooked meal versus the fast food.
Right.
Or getting the fast food and bringing it home. But no, yeah. Actually, you know, it's that, it's those things of intention that we do. Ministry of availability, man.
Yeah.
That's good.
And it's kind of crazy because, and we'll, I'm sure we'll get to this, but as an elite Spartan racer, fast is always on my mind. Moving faster, running faster, getting through obstacles faster. And I think there's an appropriate time and place for fast. But I think learning how to balance the slow moments of our life and choosing to make moments slower, to listen longer, to maintain eye contact longer, to listen kind of deeper and hear better, and just be present is really, really important. So I'm not saying we got to do everything slow. I don't do everything slow, but I choose my slow moments on purpose.
Nice. That's good. We talked about that a little bit last month too. I love how it's all just fitting together.
Yeah, that's cool. That's cool.
That's really good. So before we dive into the Spartan stuff, because you went there.
Yeah.
And you know I want to, but I want to come back to the college campus and being a resident director, being an RD, and have you unpack a little bit, what's it like working with college students on a college campus? Let's start with that one, and then I got a follow-up question.
Okay. Working with college students is awesome. I think it's an incredibly formative time. I know that for me, being here at NNU as a student was incredibly formative, and this job is incredibly unique because, in one sense, these students are mature and capable and are teaching me things about technology and a variety of things. But, you know, in the next moment, they're just brand new at this whole life that's ahead of them. And so it's honestly a pretty vulnerable time. And that's a really cool place to be because I feel like it creates an opportunity for real change and real transformation to actually happen. Again, I'll go back to, I think culturally, we don't take the time for real change, real transformation, real conversation. I think we've gotten into the habit of recognizing addiction, recognizing pain. We see statistics and we understand them, and maybe it's just because it seems like such a vast problem. We kind of just like glaze over it and keep moving. Like, well, let's just keep doing what we're doing. Let's just get the task done that we're aiming for. The cool thing about this job is that the only task that I have is to invest in people's lives. So someone's addiction, someone's pain, someone's mourning, someone's loss, that is my job. And so instead of glazing over situations like that, it's my job to dive into those things and be as present as a student wants me to be. So I'll tell you, one of my favorite parts of this job, and this sounds really weird, the disciplinary side of this job is my favorite because when everything's on the line and I know the truth and a student knows the truth and we sit together in my office and I say, I know what's going on, and then they have the opportunity to either tell the truth or try to deny it. And in those moments, you can actually influence real change and real transformation and say, these are the actual steps we can take to see growth. This is what God can do in this moment to actually allow healing to take place in your life. And there's no glazing happening at all. It's person to person, face to face. Here's the issue that's in front of us, and let's figure out how to heal and grow.
So, get real, real quick.
Yeah, exactly. So I love those moments. I think we don't do enough of that culturally. I don't know if we hold each other accountable as well as we should. So this is a high accountability kind of role, and I absolutely love it. I think it's so
cool. Dude, I love how much you're smiling about it. And because it's the disciplinary side of anything, let alone on a college campus. Now, albeit it's a faith-based institution, and people are signing life, you know, lifestyle agreements and stuff coming into school here.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean they're being followed necessarily. And then, you know, college students, young adults are ended up all kinds of different situations. Yeah. And now they're sitting in front of you and you're going, this isn't, instead of going, this sucks, I hate this, this is the worst part of my job, you're going, this is the point in my job and my roles and responsibility that has the most mm-hmm. potential for transformation.
Yeah, absolutely. Because think of this, right?
Great perspective.
So here's this is not a real life example, but a fairly common example of, say you've got someone who's caught in an embarrassing situation. Say we find someone who's got drugs in their room, or they and I know people hate,
what on a Christian campus.
I know that people no. hate hearing that that would be possible. Guess what? This is the world we live in.
Yeah.
So say we find that person, we find that thing, that item. Initially, there's this embarrassment, right? Like, oh man, I've been caught. And initially, there's a frustration, like, oh, there's these rules. But with every person I've talked to so far in a setting like that, there's a little glimmer of hope. Because a lot of times, if someone's addicted to something, they know they're addicted, but their shame and their fear is keeping them from talking about it.
Mm.
So where that student once was hiding everything, felt trapped, felt addicted, felt shame, a lot of times they, not that they enjoy getting caught, but they are in some ways grateful that there's this opportunity being handed them saying, hey, we can get you help, and they're, and God can redeem this situation if you're willing to go through
yeah.
it. So I guess the way that we discipline people on campus is, yeah, we have our rules, but ultimately our goal fits in with the mission and vision of NNU, and that is to transform the lives of these young people and to be a part of seeing God do that. So so yeah, it's a phenomenal experience. It's worth the late nights and the rowdiness and all the noise.
Dude, I just appreciate the way that you embrace that. And I'm wondering what like encouragement or advice that you might have for a local leader that's working with young adults, college age students. How old are you?
I'm 28.
So you're an older like young adult.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And it's a different stage of life than we talk about young adults.
Yeah.
And people kind of throw that all in together, but you're really in different seasons of, mm-hmm. of life.
Right.
And you're adults, but then people yeah. are going through different stuff. So
yeah.
As an older young adult who's in this position, mm-hmm. takes on this pastoral perspective, this holistic view, are there things that come to mind that you could offer to the local church leader
hmm.
of just encouragement? Not and not saying that like you've got it all figured out, or you're the right. guru, or you've got the silver bullet to fix it all. But you've got some experience,
yeah,
and you're with college students every day, and yeah. you are an older young adult too. What do you say to me as a local leader in a church, as a volunteer with young adults, or to that youth pastor that's trying to do young adult stuff,
yeah.
or that lead pastor to church that thinks it's not even worth investing in young adults because they're just not even going to be around very long?
Right.
Just what comes to mind?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, I'm definitely not an expert here. So I can just share what I've observed. And I'll start with saying this, like growing up in church my entire life, always being at church, my thought process was that there were people who went to church and there were people who knew they should have been going to church but didn't. And now I see that very differently because I think what's true is there are people who go to church and there are people who don't go to church and don't really care. or don't feel guilty about it, don't feel bad yeah. about it.
Why would I need that in my life?
Right,
yeah.
Exactly. And so when I interact with young people today, now in this population here at NNU, there's a lot of people, majority of our students have gone to church, have a relationship with God at various levels. But I would say that like the key to young adult ministry today, and again, I'm not an expert, but just what I'm sensing
yeah.
is that instead of calling a young person to most importantly, instead of viewing the most important thing as following tradition or following rules or, you know, staying in line with family values, like those things are incredibly important, but I don't think we're going to connect with young people unless we're present first, unless we're available first, unless we're like listening first. Because I think if we lead with tradition, I think if we lead with values and rules, I found this myself because I tend to lead with those things. Like, hey man, just straighten up, you know, get your life together, follow these follow these guidelines and everything's going to be fine. But what I'm sensing is that step one is presence. being available to listen, to hear, and then, you know, guide and nurture and give encouragement. But
and the reality, go ahead.
I'm still learning. I was just gonna say I'm still learning. I don't know. I don't have all the answers.
I think you're way ahead of the curve, because the reality is those are the long, hard, slow journey that mm-hmm. lead to transformation, instead of the quick flash in the right. pan, kind of throw something together and get people together so you can count them and say we have, you know, young adults around and stuff. Right. It's being people right. with people.
Yeah.
And it's deep work.
Right. And I think now is the time for us to recognize that, because I think we all know the fact of the matter is young people my age and younger aren't going to church like they used to, especially not in Europe. And we're starting to see that a lot more here in the United States. Mm-hmm. And there's a definite panic for sure. People right. are going, what's going to be
a lot of hand wringing.
Yeah. What's going to be the future of our churches? And I think too often we try to go for the quick fix. Well, let's figure out how we're going to plug these people into to this or to that, and to get them into our walls, you know.
Right.
But this is not a quick fix issue. This is a slow, long process of caring and connecting. And if the goal is how do we get them through our doors today, that's the wrong goal. I think the question is how do we care for them where they're at right now in this very complex culture of what it means to be in your 20s.
Mic drop. Walk away. End the podcast.
I'm just thinking out loud.
No, dude, it's good. And this is why I like talking to you, Grayson. Seriously, man. I mean, I just enjoy it. And if other leaders aren't getting encouraged by this and like receiving and gleaning something from it, that's on them. Because I am. And I appreciate it. I almost want to talk about Spartan.
Okay.
But not yet.
That's fine.
I'm dragging it out. I'm dragging it out for my own selfish reasons. Putting it at the end. I want to hear from you on your perspective of holistic health. Hmm. And the times that you and I have talked over the last few years, just on and off about what it means to be a whole person and take care of yourself a whole person, and not just focus on the mental or emotional or spiritual or just the physical. But that's all tied together, and especially as Christ followers, what that means to you and kind of your passion around that.
Right. I think the best way for me to, and I'll try not to take too long, but.
All the time you need. This is slow work.
Slow work.
We're being present and available here.
I like that. I feel like the best way for me to describe how I think about this now is to talk about my own journey. I've always, I grew up in the church. A small church called Boise 5 Mile Church of the Nazarene. Loved it there as a kid. Felt like my whole life revolved around the church, and I was fine with that. So the idea of having a spirit and having a soul made perfect sense to me. Even at a young age, the idea of being like a thoughtful person and a cerebral person as well as a spiritual person, that made sense to me. And then on the other, like somewhat separately, was my absolute love for being outside and moving and competing and taking part in sports. I grew up with 3 brothers. We had a big backyard and a trampoline and a BMX track. And my goal as a young child was to be a professional athlete. And I didn't know, I had no picture of like what sport I even wanted to be a professional athlete in. All I wanted is, I thought, I love sports so much. I love being active so much. So me and my friend down the street, we designated, even as kids, we designated time after school every day where we were going to practice a sport. Didn't matter what sport, but we were going to practice a sport to prepare for the day that we become professional athletes.
Nice.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, well, you got to envision it.
And so what happened is I did track and field in wrestling and cross country in high school. And then I was recruited to compete in track and field in college. And the competitor side of me really, really came out in those environments where I wanted to win, I wanted to compete, I wanted to be, and there was a lot of negative side effects there too, where I wanted to be known, and I wanted to be recognized as great, and there was never really a point in high school, or even in college, where I was recognized as great. Where that started to change in college for me was, I got married, I really had dove in with all of my being into my call to ministry. And All of a sudden, like, me being recognized, being noticed as an athlete was not nearly as important as me serving people, caring for my wife, and just living my life joyfully and to the fullest. Mm. And the crazy thing is that I, as an athlete, I took off at that moment. It was crazy. This crazy switch. And I won a conference championship in the pole vault. I set a school record in the decathlon. And it was all, like, kind of when I started thinking a little bit more holistically. That was like a quick blip of a moment, because as soon as I moved off campus, I quit sports, I started my new job, and for a year I just kind of laid around on the couch.
Is this here or is this in Salem?
This is in Salem, yeah. Okay. In Salem. I just kind of like laid around on the couch and I didn't really do anything active. And then things just went kind of downhill fast. I got super lazy. I'm not even talking lazy like physically. I got super lazy in my relationship with Morgan. I got super lazy in my job. And I was only like 6 months into my job. And so I just started praying. I said, God, what is missing that has made me this like bump on a log? And I just felt this like deep call to challenge myself. Mm. And in a way that I would learn from. And I thought, well, my entire life, the most learning I've ever done is through activity, through movement. So I found this Spartan race thing, and I thought, well, I'll try one of these Spartan races. So I just started to, for the first time ever, started to try to learn and grow spiritually, mentally, and physically all together in one as a whole and complete person. Okay. So I started doing these crazy workouts where my apartment complex had this tiny little pool, and it'd be like 40 degrees and rainy. And I'd jump in that pool and I'd tread water. I'd say, okay, I'm gonna tread water for an hour. And when things get rough, I'm just gonna pray. I'm just gonna like lean into viewing God as my daily bread and as my strength. And I'm gonna try to, and not like I'm gonna try to like self-help myself into being successful, but my real intention was I'm gonna face a challenge with the sole purpose of relying on God to be my strength and my motivation. And what happened for me in that time period was absolutely incredible. And I felt not just myself as a whole person becoming better, but like as a husband, just being better at like making eye contact and sticking out hard conversations. Being, like we were just talking about, I was better at being present. Mm. As an employee, I got better at facing hard challenges and looking someone who's suffering right in the eye and staying there and just being in that moment. And so it was like an experiment on myself where I learned that there's these in a way our physical activity and the way that we challenge our body is not only healthy for us as an individual in terms of our mental health and our physical health and the chemical reactions that happen in our body that make us feel better, but also in the way that it trains us to be better at ministry. That might be a weird way to put that, but in the way that it made me be able to stick out hard conversations longer and look someone who's crying right in the eyes and saying, this is tough and this hurts and this is awkward, but I know that God will supply the strength to stick this out and be here. So that's kind of my journey. Mm. And I kind of the way that's going forward for me is I feel, well, I think we see this epidemic culturally where our thoughts about what's important to us is not involving our physical bodies. I think I don't need to go into the stats to demonstrate how we've neglected our body being an important part of how we live on this earth. But I don't think that's good stewardship, not for us and especially not for the people we're trying to serve. And now I guess this is just like a side note that my mind is stuck on right now is that we live in a culture where I think we have pursued the easiest route for years now. The things that we sit on are softer. The temperature in our rooms is more comfortable. The food that we eat is tastier. And if I don't want to get in my car to drive and get food, I just dial up Uber Eats and they'll bring me my food, you know?
Yeah.
I think we've pursued the easiest route for so long that it actually affects our relationships. I think it affects the way that I listen. I think it affects the way that I mourn with someone. I think it affects the way that I suffer with people. It even affects the way that I'm able to like maintain eye contact with someone who's hurting. I've mentioned that a couple times. So I think we need to choose activities that not only keep us healthy, but keep us sharp. Like in our ability to suffer and our ability to bear through hard things with people and our ability to just work hard for the sake of another person. So I know that's a super long answer, but I think there's a physical element to becoming the kind of person that can actually be there and be ready to be there when someone is in need. Super long answer.
No, it's great, man. And it reminds me of one of my favorite quotes from N.T. Wright as a theologian. And I don't know, maybe you and I have talked about this before, but I'm sure you've read this and come across it. But we're not just saved as souls, but as wholes.
Yeah.
Have you heard that?
Yeah, I have.
Yeah. And that's kind of a resetting mantra for me. In the places in my life where I think I'm experiencing the most joy and peace and fulfillment, are when I'm treating myself and other people like wholes, like whole people.
Yeah.
And not like just a part of them.
Right.
And not just a part of me, and then objectifying myself or other people, whatever that is. It could be overeating, for me. It could be, oversleeping or whatever, but there's this joy that comes when we begin to align all these different areas of the way that we're made and we begin to pay attention to those things and work in and out of them, in a way that's consistent with how we're made. It's like, well, it makes sense that you would feel good.
Yeah.
And that you'd think clear. Like when I'm not working out, I get stressed way easier. I don't think about things as clearly. I'm not as creative.
Yeah.
But if I'm really training hard, which is different for me than it is for you, but when I'm really training hard for me, but I'm not reading something that's, you know, taking in new thoughts, listening to podcasts, taking in a book or something, or talking with other people about the things I'm learning, I'm not sharpening in that way.
Yeah.
I'm not as whole as I can be. And so I'm not trying to say that. And I hope the contentness of that is speaking through from my heart too. And not just to like I don't ever feel like I'm completely whole, but it's something you're striving for. It's something I'm striving for. It's a way that we're made. And I think often in Christianity, the flesh, the body, can be something that's like demonized, and like it's going to go away. You know, your soul is going to leave your body, and you're going to go to heaven. But I'm pretty sure Jesus raised from the dead, and that was his whole person. And he's like the first fruits of the resurrection of the dead. And one day he's going to return and God's going to make everything new.
Yeah.
And so that's the hope that I live into. And I love being around you because I know that you live into that. You're not just talking about it. You're not just preaching it. And actually, more importantly, you're preaching it through the way that you live your life is an example to me, to other people, of what it means to be a whole human being, to try to be a whole human being.
Yeah.
So sorry, I went off on kind of a tirade there, but I'm excited by what you're saying.
I think you explained that really well. And I think it's tough because our minds immediately jump to, oh man, now I gotta hit the gym, or now if I'm gonna be a whole person, I gotta get fit. You know, fit is a very popular word right
get
now,
fit.
By the way. Yeah, fitness,
functional fitness.
But that's not actually the way that I view it, because and at some point, especially if you're going to be a competitor, your level of fitness, I'm making air quotes with my fingers, your level of fitness
matters. Thank you for the commentary description.
You're welcome. Your level of fitness probably matters in that scenario, but for a lot of us, moving in ways that are fun, moving in ways that you enjoy, moving in ways that engages your family in a real and practical and exciting way. Those are the things that I think really transform us. I think those are the things that really matter. And when I think about being a whole person who's healthy, I think there's also an element that involves connection to God's creation, connection to animals, connection to my feet touching the ground, which is holding me up today, you know?
Yeah.
And that's what, so when I go for a long run, that's what I'm thinking about it. That's what I'm praying through, thanking God for the sunrise, thanking God for the wind, for the ice, or for the dirt, you know? And there's this, it's a different kind of connection that I think we've lost, honestly, that keeps us rooted to the reality that God sustains us, God supplies life for us, and is honestly the source of our strength and the source of our daily existence, you know? Yeah. So that's just when I picture like wholeness in that way, that's what I picture is this real connection to the earth and God's creation.
No, that's good. I mean, that's an even broader perspective. I was getting niched in just my individualism as a as a human being that I believe isn't created in the image of God, you know? And you're taking it even further, going, we're part of creation. We're part of God's good creation.
Yeah.
And we get to live that out and embrace it intentionally.
Yeah.
You know? Love it, man. Love it. So, okay, back to my questions here that I am not tied to in any way, but they just kind of help me guide through this. I think we've already answered quite a few of the stuff, and we're hitting up on an hour here. Are you good for a little bit more?
Yeah, I've got
because we haven't even done a deep dive on Spartan yet.
But which is the real reason you're here.
Which is the real... No, it's secondary. It's secondary because I feel like right now we could stop, and we have great... Not just content, but story, friendship.
That's right.
Journey to share together that give people a real good feel for who you are. But man, if I'm a church leader listening to this again, and the different things that we've talked about, I would feel encouraged. I hope other people do too, and that there's something that they can apply right now to life. So we could stop right now and we could be good. Like we've covered the things we need to focus on, you know, the mind and now body. Right. For this month, but it's time to flip the page and get to the next part here.
Right.
Tell us about how your journey began with obstacle course racing, with Spartan Race, and like where it's progressed to today.
Right. I feel like we got to start with even what in the world is obstacle course racing and what is Spartan Race, because even though it is currently the fastest growing sport in the world. Really, no one knows about it still.
I know.
So Spartan Race is an obstacle course racing company with the goal of ripping a million people off of their couches and becoming more active.
Originally, it was 100 million people, but they scaled it back to a million people.
Really?
I don't know. I've just heard different numbers thrown around. Maybe, sorry to interrupt your flow.
It might be 100 million. So anyways, basically what Spartan Race is... It's like a test of human capability and suffering in the outdoors.
Yes.
So it's the base element of Spartan racing is mountain running, trail running, and or just like off-road running. Sometimes we're not even on trails. We're just on a hillside or in a river or, you know, going through a gravel pit or something. And then the next two elements would be would be carrying heavy weights at a fast pace, and then grip strength, like how to move your body across a certain area without touching the ground and only using your hands. And then maybe the fourth element would be the ability to crawl, roll, and things like that. So it's like the most basic forms of human capability tied into one suffer fest of a race. So.
Okay, well, I gotta stop you just for a second, okay? Because you gave your definition, and you gave your definition. I'm going to give mine.
Okay.
I'm going to interject here. Because if that's how I would have found out about Spartan racing, I never would have done it. That sounds horrible to me. That sounds horrible, but it's all true, right?
Yes.
So when I heard about, there were parents that my kids went to school with, like this lady... out at Celebration Park, you know, the bridge way out there.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
You go running out there sometimes?
Yeah.
And they've got this state park there, and you can do the addle throw, like the spear thing, right? Yeah. And so she's amazing at this. she's hitting this target again and again. And I'm looking at the fourth graders that are there, and I'm a parent, you know, chaperone on this trip, and she's one of the other parents. And I'm like, why are you so good at this? And she's like, well, I've done this thing called Spartan racing. You have to throw a Spartan. I'm like, what is that? This was years and years ago.
Yeah.
And then my son was on a flag football team, and one of the coaches and his wife were talking about volunteering at this Spartan race thing that they did, and they'd sit around fires and drink with all their friends, and they thought it was the greatest. And then they'd go race the next day, and they thought it was the greatest thing ever. I'm like, what type of like heathen activity is this? That sounds so interesting to me. Like obstacle course racing, and I'm looking at them going, if they can do it, I can do it. Mm-hmm. Whatever it is. So years later, it's when I find out it's like spear throw and rope climb and like all the, I'm like, obstacles, those are awesome. I want to do that. And then as I got into it, so the obstacles drew me in, okay? Yeah, I heard this mystique thing that these people are talking about. Yeah, they're doing all those cool things. Ropes. Yeah. And then I figured out, oh, you have to run in between them. I'm like, okay. See, I got into it. You started all with running.
Right.
And I got into it because of the obstacles, and then figured out, no, 80% of this thing is running.
Right.
And if you want to, like, be okay at it, even in the open, like, bracket, where anybody can sign up, you're really going to be running a lot, so you should work on your cardio. Right.
It's funny because, like, 80% of it is running, and 40% of that running is uphill.
Oh, you're making it even... Should I even do it this year? No, I don't know.
Absolutely
no, what?
Should.
I shouldn't do it?
No, I said you should.
Okay,
you absolutely should.
I'm going to. Yeah. Okay, sorry. That was a really bad tangent and a side note to say, you got to work on your introduction to this thing. But it wasn't wrong.
Well, I didn't know you were trying to get me to sell it to people.
Oh, I'm not trying to sell it.
I can sell it. I was just telling the truth.
I was about ready to quit by the time you got. I'm just messing with you, man.
See, but there's a whole group of people out there, and I was one of them at the beginning, looking for the most challenging thing I could physically come across.
Yeah.
And
but you had the running background too, that you were like, oh, this is a different way to go about this.
Yeah. And man, growing up as a kid, like my brothers and I would go down to the Snake River, down to Swan Falls Dam, down here in southern Idaho. And there's all these huge boulders of like lava rock lining the river.
Yeah.
And we'd have competitions see who could run the fastest across the tops of those boulders. So super high risk running, but also super high reward because you feel like you're flying and jumping and leaping.
The technical.
And scrambling and trying not to fall into the water. And so to me, that's always been one of my favorite things. So, when I came across Spartan Race and I thought, one, this is one of the most challenging things a human could face. And two, it's kind of in my element because it's outdoors, it's dirty, there's mud, that you're going to get rocks in your shoes and you're going to run downhill super fast and probably fall down. I was like, hey, that sounds like something I've been doing forever. So that's kind of what drew me into it.
That's cool, man.
And then...
Sorry, I projected my story onto yours.
No, it's good. It's good. It's okay. It's okay.
I did almost quit.
So, yeah. Everyone almost quit. Even the pros.
That's right.
Yeah. What else do you want to know?
Well, yeah. I mean... Like what was your first Spartan race,
yep.
and where has it progressed from there? Like
So my first Spartan race was in it's technically called the Portland Spartan Race, but it's actually in Washougal, Washington,
mm-hmm.
and it was on a motocross track, and I signed it.
What year is it?
It was 2016, I think, and. I signed up at the time there was an elite wave, which was like the pro wave, and then a competitive wave, which is for people who wanted to be competitive and get a time, but weren't necessarily elite.
Is that different than age group?
At the time it was. So I jumped in that race
In the competitive,
okay. Yeah. And I won the competitive race by like 10 minutes or something like that. And
dang.
And it hurt so bad. I remember in the middle of it thinking, this is so painful. And
which length of race was it? Did you already say that?
It was a sprint. So sprint. It was just under 4 miles.
And that's back when they used to like shift like...
Right.
It Spartans aren't very great at counting. So right. it might be 5 miles. It might be 3 miles or somewhere in between.
Yeah. Yeah. It'd be... Yeah. They actually at that time wouldn't even tell you the distance. They'd say it's a sprint, so it's somewhere between this range.
But, which was part of it. It was part of the allure of the obstacle course.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So I did that race and just was immediately hooked by, this might be a little technical, but I was hooked by the fact that you have to cover ground efficiently, and then all of a sudden your heart rate is going to spike with this like grueling obstacle, your grip's going to burn, the chance you're going to fall off this rope, and then if you survive... You just have to start running again. And there's like this there's just like such a brutal element to it where it really is a test of like, now there's a lot of like skill sets that go into it, but in the end, a Spartan race is a test of who's got it between their ears, like who's tough enough upstairs in their brain and their mind to...
It's not just a physical thing.
Yeah, to last long enough to win that kind of race. So, yeah, I started there. And then at the time, I couldn't really afford to race very often. So I just started volunteering. So what Spartan would do is they'd offer you like a volunteer code where they would give you a free race if you volunteered. So I would race in the morning and I'd start jumping in the elite heats. And then I would...
You didn't have to race in the open heats as a volunteer? They'd let you do the elite
heats? No, at the time you could get a full elite code. So I'd race in the elite heat, and then I'd volunteer in the afternoon, like sweep the course.
You say sweep the course, do you mean like run through the course and make sure everybody's clear? Or you mean like...
Yeah, so once you're done, you do the course again, and you just clean up trash, and you make sure... You just encourage people, and so it's just mostly cleaning and making sure everyone's clear and safe, and no one's... laying on the side of the trail out there somewhere. Yep. Yeah. So I did that for a while. And then I think it was in 2017, I started placing and getting on the podium for some of the shorter races. And then in 2018, because of some of those placements, I was invited on to the Spartan Pro Team. And kind of from there, I've just been doing that. I've been racing on the Spartan Pro Team, mostly focused on the shorter distances. And last year and this year, starting to lean into some of the longer distances. So,
okay.
Yeah, it's been a ton of fun.
So what does it mean to be on the Spartan Pro Team? What are the elements of that?
Yeah, it's different for a lot of people. In Spartan Race, there are full-time athletes. Like if you're going to know anybody, it would be guys like some of the legends like Hobie Call, and then... More recently,
Hobie Call works construction.
Right. So I guess that's true. He's not one of the full time guys. Who am I thinking of? This should be simpler than it is. So there's guys out there like Ryan Atkins, full time athletes on the Spartan Pro Team.
Yep.
Robert Killian,
Lindsay Webster.
Lindsay Webster. And no one who's listening to this probably knows those names.
We can nerd out on this.
Yeah. And they can look it up, and then they'll enjoy knowing who those people are. But
that's right.
There's a small group of full time Spartan Race athletes, and then below them there's. And not necessarily below in terms of capability, but just in terms of, like, are they working full-time or not?
Availability.
There's a group of us that work full-time, and then Spartan Race kind of, like, part-time or kind of, like, less or, like, part-time, you know?
Yeah.
So there's it's kind of interesting in Spartan Race. There's a lot of people who work full-time and are also incredibly successful national champions and world-ranked athletes.
It's amazing.
It was one of the reasons I love the sport is you can, for me, I can serve in ministry and compete at the same time. So that gets me really excited. So I would describe myself as one of their lower tier athletes on the Spartan Pro Team. I'm not necessarily in terms of competitiveness, because sure, I'm not the fastest guy in the circuit or even probably one of the top 10 fastest guys, but I feel like any given sprint or super distance race, I'm gonna be right in there on the bubble. I'm trying to race for one of those top spots.
So a sprint nowadays is about 5K.
Yeah, 5K.
And the super is at 10K.
Yeah.
And so the 5K translates to what, 3.2, 3.1?
Yeah, 5K is 3.1. 10K.
Miles.
Yeah, 10K is 6.2 miles. And then the beast distance is a half marathon, so 13 point something.
Is it 13 though?
Because
I looked up a 10K the other day, and the mileage was less than 13. I'm pretty sure because I...
No. So a 10K is 6.2.
Oh, did I say 10K?
Yeah.
Okay, let me just look up 15K right now, because I need to deal with this reality, because I'm going to do this race this year, as you know.
I think, do they call it a 15K or do they call it the half marathon?
They call it a 15K.
Oh, interesting.
So, you keep talking.
Okay. So anyways, at one point they called it like the select pro team. So there's like the high level pro team athletes, and then the select pro team were people that they wanted to help keep racing, and they wanted to throw us a little, you know, some merchandise and, you know, some money to help us stay in the sport and keep growing as athletes. Now they just have, they just call it the pro team, and there's a variety of contract levels in that pro team. But
contracted with Spartan?
Yeah, contracted with Spartan. And then, but now it's a global pro team, so they advertise like 200 people. I don't know if that's an exact number. I don't even know if they know the exact number. But it's they say it's like 200 people globally on this Spartan pro team. So,
but still.
And if you look, there's a... There really is a global team of Spartan racers out there.
Well, so. And you see them. You see it in the races in the different parts of the world, especially like in Europe, where you see the U.S. folks, Canadian folks going over there.
Mm-hmm.
And then you see like John Albin coming over and competing in Tahoe in World Championship and everything. Okay, look this up.
Okay.
15K is 9.3 miles.
Interesting.
Which gives me a lot of hope.
Yeah.
Because running a half marathon and doing 30 obstacles,
mm-hmm.
that's pretty daunting for me. I mean, you look disappointed right now.
I'm wondering, I'm going to have to look this up because I've heard it described as it's going to be a half marathon distance race.
I just need to deal with reality, whatever it is, Grayson. Well,
prepare for 13.2, and if it ends up being 9, hey, good day.
Okay, that's what I'm doing.
There you go.
Okay. Glad we had that little chat.
Yeah. Yeah, what else do you want to know? What do you got?
Okay, so... When I talk about what are the elements of being a Spartan pro, on the Spartan pro team, like what do you get? Is that too personal to ask? Like, well, I mean, do they give you free merch? Do they fly you places? Is that have to do with the different tiers of being a part of this 200? And by the way, if there's a million plus people on the planet that have done Spartan races, and you're a part of 200 of the people that are on the Spartan pro team, that's kind of cool.
It's kind of cool. I like it. I can't lie. What you get, I think, honestly, and I don't even know. I think it varies per person based on how often you race, based on your individual contract with Spartan. So I don't even know. Like, I can't speak for most people.
Sure.
You know, I'm in the process right now of actually, you know, signing contracts and preparing for the 2020 season. So... I don't even know.
Do we need to talk to your legal team? Or like, how does this work, Grayson?
No, I mean, it does. They do recommend that you do that, but I've never been a high enough level individual.
You better call Saul, bro.
To need a full legal team. So what I can tell you though is that you get, as a Spartan Pro Team member, you get free race access to every race. Which I think is a big deal because you're racing so much that the cost could super duper add up.
So you could go to any race you wanted to, like in North America, or you could go anywhere on the planet.
Any race in North America, and then last year they sent out a list of races that you could, you know, use your pro codes to race in around the country. So
you know, I need to plan a trip to either UAE,
okay,
for the rumored World Championships. Because my brother is on the Horn of Africa, or we need to go to South Africa and do one with him.
That would be crazy.
Or this one's a little bit more tangible, like, or a little more accessible, mm-hmm. Australia.
That would be amazing.
I want to put a group of people together and go to Australia and do a race. And bro, I've got accommodations for us. I've got mates down there. That's like we could just stay in Brisbane. We could do the Sunshine Coast or the Gold Coast. Either one.
Man.
We could do both of them. I don't know. I'm just
that
saying,
would be
if
crazy.
You wanted to do that, we could do it.
That would be crazy.
And a stadium.
Stadium. Okay.
You know, how many stadiums have you done?
Just one.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't think I'll do another one. No one, there's no one listening to this podcast that knows what that is.
Well, though. Maybe. Maybe we don't know who's listening to this yet. But the reason you told me with the stadium is you love being outside and you love the outdoors and doing a stadium race in a stadium.
Yeah.
And it has more CrossFit elements to it,
yeah.
and those things. You're not in the mountains, you're not in the trees. You're not seeing the majestic views,
yeah.
You know?
And no, I love CrossFit elements. I love short, fast races. But if I, you know, if I've got free time and I get to choose what races I'm going to compete at, I'm not super interested in, first of all, driving to a city and staying in a city, and then, you know, competing in a stadium on concrete. That's not where my skill set even lies. In the running world, I'm not fast. But if me and a group of guys were going to run across, like I said, a bunch of rocks or through a field full of logs or, you know, through on a hillside covered in shale, I have a lot better chance because I've been doing that for a long time.
Yeah.
Just living life and enjoying stuff. But
so yeah. You like the imperfect elements.
The imperfect elements. That's right. And I also like, you know, if Morgan and I travel to a race, you know, we like being outside together as a couple. So we'll run the race or I'll run the race and then we'll go for a hike for the rest of the day or we'll go find a waterfall or...
That's like your cool down afterwards.
Yeah, we'll just go do something fun. In fact, when I raced in Portland this last year in 2019, we did a hike the day before and then I raced and then we did a hike after going to waterfalls and climbing mountains and just living life the way we like to. So and that's what I love about Spartan Race right now is that it like the not just the races but the training leans into the kind of life that I like to live.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think I just enjoy being in the outdoors. And we still have to go to, is it Wilson Creek?
Yeah.
I still got to go do that. That's going to be part of my beast training, dude.
Right.
When
you're ready.
But I like it when I'm, come on, man. I mean, get out there, you know? Let me tread the water and almost drown.
I don't have to carry you back.
No, you won't. Maybe. You might have to carry me back. I much prefer the outdoors and running than I ever would a treadmill. Like, I appreciate the versatility of, I hear different people doing different stuff and I see, like, the podcast with Bracken and Kurt,
mm-hmm.
That we were listening to, their new podcast, Running Public, and having Hobie call in there, and him talking about only doing 10 miles a week to train. He's like, I could up my mileage from 90 miles to 110, but I wasn't going to get better. So I'm going to run weighted miles, work out 3 days a week doing cardio. Have you got to this point in the podcast yet? Okay.
Yeah.
Don't want to... Spoiler alert.
I'm familiar with his training.
Yeah, stuff, and I'm like, wait a minute. He's 42?
Mm-hmm.
I'm 42, almost 43. He might be 43. And I'm going, okay, I know he's a world champion and all that stuff, but it gives me hope as just a regular guy, regular person of I don't need to... My body's not built for long distance running. I'm not like naturally... My biomechanics aren't engineered that way.
Yeah.
But I could up my mileage and not only do 10 a week, but do a little bit more, but then do some more intentional things. That's why I like working out with you and the things you're teaching me about dragging a bag through a field in the morning. Why don't we talk about that a little bit? Talk about our Wednesday morning workouts.
Let me go back first because you're partially right, but you're missing a major element.
Which part?
Based on this guy, Hobie Collin, his training.
Okay.
Is that...
Learn me.
Hobie Collin, his 20s... was at the Olympic trials for years in a row for the marathon.
Right.
So the guy thinks, so he's got...
Maybe, he's got a cardio base.
He's got a four, probably a 20, 25 years of high mileage under his belt. So if you have 25 years of high mileage under your belt, maybe you can afford to drop down to lower miles and not have any effects. But if you're coming from no mileage... Adopting the Hobie Call style probably isn't going to be...
You know, I don't like the direction this is going, Grayson, at all.
But I'm saying, like, hey, what are your goals? If your goals are to get out and to accomplish a Spartan race, you don't have to be this elite runner. If you're out there to crush obstacles, climb hills, and experience something awesome, you can do that in a lot of different ways of training.
So at 40 years old, I'm... finally thinking about pulling the trigger on a Spartan race after all these little touches over the years from different people.
Mm-hmm.
And really as bad as, hopefully this doesn't sound too horrible, but it was like watching YouTube videos, just like amateur YouTube videos of people doing Spartan races and seeing just the lack of condition that people were in and still doing Spartan races. And in my head going, if they can do it,
right.
What's my problem? Like, I got no excuse.
Right.
If they can get themselves out there, I can get myself out there. I can get myself out there. And so it was like just pulling the trigger on doing the registration, paying for it, not knowing anything about it, not knowing anybody else that was really going to it, and then going to the Boise Sprint in 2018 in our backyard here in Payette, right? And then finding out all these people, my pastor from my church, all the people from my church, these people in the community that I knew and they were doing, I was like, what?
Yeah.
Now I can do this with friends and a community, and I've just kind of expanded that, and that's been a huge thing for me. But this has been something that's really helped me embrace the physicality of life and the holistic health and wellness. I'm I'm eating the best now. And I haven't done this the last couple years. Even though this is my third summer, I'm going into doing Spartan races. My third year doing them. But I'm eating better.
Mm-hmm.
I'm experiencing just less stress. When I encountered it, I'm more creative about how to overcome it. I'm feeling better. My body's kind of shifting and reshaping. My clothes are fitting looser. Mm-hmm. Like, there's a lot of positive things coming out of that for me. But when I started, I didn't know where to train. Like, I didn't know what to do, and I was getting Spartan, like, emails and stuff. But I just went out to a playground and started swinging on monkey bars and popped a tendon off my shoulder. I've told you that story, right?
Yeah.
So my biceps all weird now. What recommendation do you have for people that might be thinking about doing a Spartan race?
Yeah.
Just from your perspective is...
Because
you do some coaching, too. We haven't even talked about that.
Yeah.
Coaching and consulting And I want to hear some about that too.
Yeah.
But give us some advice for somebody that might be one of those people peeling off a couch
right.
and going out and doing, or doing a half marathon or marathon. Like, where do you start with that?
Yeah, that's pretty broad. I think, especially with Spartan race, I think you start by starting. Like, what's cool about Spartan is that people are always afraid of the obstacles and whatnot. But if you sign up for just the open wave, which means you're just going to show up and you're going to give it a try, and you're not there to compete, you're just there to accomplish it, which it is a huge accomplishment to complete one.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. It is.
I'll take my participation medal.
Yeah, that's right.
I earned it.
Yes, you did.
It was not given.
I'd say you got to get out there, you just got to try it, and sign up and go for it no matter what. Now, there's obviously some things like, what I always tell people, say, because I talk to people all the time. I talked to a guy 2 days ago who said, man, I really want to get into running. And like, step one, don't start running, because you're gonna hurt yourself. So walk.
Your body's not used to that.
Yeah. Walk a little, run a little, walk a little, run a little. And then start trading out your walking time for your running time.
I should incorporate that into my training.
even if you just sign up for a Spartan race, don't think you're going to start by running the whole thing. Walk your first Spartan race and try the obstacles that you feel comfortable with and go around the ones you don't. And what will happen is it'll inspire you and challenge you to be able to accomplish all of those obstacles. And then the next you'll want to be able to run the whole course or something like that.
Like, what, if I did that, what can I do?
Yeah, exactly.
Not many people realize in the open heat, you don't have to do 30 burpees at an obstacle.
Right.
Like, you could...
You should, though.
You should. And so I'll tell people that, and they'll be like, really? And I go, yeah, it's just a matter of pride. Like, what do you want to do? And they're like, oh, like, I have to do the burpees, you know?
Right.
And they're like, let's do it together. Like, yeah. I'll race with you, and we can share the burpees together.
Yeah, sharing burpees is good. Yeah. I like that. Yeah, I just tell people, like, get out, start moving, start walking first if you haven't been running. And then there's just so much that's the simple bodyweight exercises that are good for a person. But ultimately, like, especially, I think it's easy for me to get out and run because it's something I truly enjoy. For a lot of people, running is not the thing that they enjoy.
Yeah.
Right? So what I tell people is, like, find something that you, like, move in ways that you enjoy.
Mm.
The only way that you're going to stick with some sort of training plan or some sort of, like, plan to be more active is to find things that you love. Here's a good example. In the summertime, my wife and I love rollerblading, right?
Kids for real?
Yeah, for real. We're kids,
dude,
in, the, kids in the 90s, right?
Yeah, that was
my
me.
My wife and I will rollerblade for miles and miles because we just love it.
No way.
But we also love paddleboarding. We love hiking. We love kayaking. There's a ton of things that we love to do.
I feel like diversity can add to fitness a lot.
Yeah. And I'm all about that. When I got into Spartan racing, and actually I've never had a gym membership in this entire process. This is my first year having access to, like, traditional weightlifting. And I'll do that because I'm trying to be an elite professional level athlete. But for a long time, I would just, you know, I'd hit the monkey bars at the local playground at like 6 a.m. and do my pull-ups there and then do some monkey bars and run some laps. And
thank you very much.
Do some push-ups and climb a hill, you know, and I go to Home Depot and buy a sandbag for $7.
Nothing wrong with that.
And carry that up and down the hill, you know? So, like, the cool thing about Spartan racing is the training is easy entry. Like, you can go to Home Depot and grab a bag, or you can put your kid on your back and carry them up the hill, you know? There's,
yeah.
It's a, in terms of like what you need to get into the sport, it's very little.
It's minimalist, really. Yeah. It's body weight. You can find stuff in your environment to work on the technical.
Yeah. Yeah, one time I was on a float trip with my dad and brother doing a 5-day canoe fishing trip down the John Day River in Oregon. And what we do is we'd finish the float for the day, and before we set up camp, we just find a rock and we take turns passing. We just like a medicine ball, like chuck that rock back and forth to each other until we felt like we got a good workout in and call it a night. You know, it's that simple. It's awesome. It's accessible.
I love it.
Yeah,
love it. What are your goals for this year? Is that too personal? We can end with that.
Okay, yeah, let's do that because I got to get going. But I've been setting goals a little bit differently than I had in the past. Now, I believe in SMART goals. I believe in goals that are measurable, attainable, all of that stuff. But when it comes to my athleticism, I've spent my whole life saying, like, I'm going to win this or I'm going to win that. I want to place this high. And even though I still, like, ideally I would like to win races and I would like to place in certain races, I kind of keep that as, like, a soft goal. One of my goals this year is to run as much as I can without getting injured and to experience as much outdoor time as I can without getting injured. My goal is to compete to the best of my ability and be, I call it being a part of the thunder. Like when the gun goes off and the lead pack goes, and you can hear like the thunder of their footsteps and like the pounding of their heartbeat. Like my goal is to be in that thunder and be one of like someone making those footsteps and being a part of that lead pack. So I'd like to, depending on my schedule, I'd like to make it to the North American Championships in Lake Tahoe this year. And I'd like to be a top-level competitor at that distance, that elevation, and that environment, you know. I also think I'm going to be, I hope to be competitive in this new 10K distance because it's shorter. It's a shorter race with higher obstacle density. So that kind of leans into my skill set a little bit more.
Yeah.
So
me too.
There we go. That's right. my goal, I'm going to go, hopefully going to be in Seattle this April racing the National Series race. And my goal is to look at any individual and believe that I can race with them, world champion or not, to not sell myself short. That's nice. My goal. So, and then if I give my best effort, whatever happens, I'll be happy with. So I know that's kind of a weird goal, but
no, that's good. Kind of that's I good. Live. Okay. Favorite obstacle.
Ooh, favorite obstacle. I think monkey bars are a ton of fun, but they don't gain me a lot of ground. So like, competitively, my favorite obstacle is called the Hercules hoist, where you got to hoist this big bag off the ground with a pulley system.
And it's like how much, 100 pounds?
Yeah, it's like it's 100 pounds or so. So generally, that's where I'm going to pick up time on a lot of racers because I'm pretty heavy for a Spartan racer in the elite category. I'm about 20 to 30 pounds heavier than all my competitors. So it makes running uphill a lot more challenging, but it makes running downhill a lot more fun. And then when it comes to a super strength-based obstacle, the Hercules is one where, in fact, in Boise this year, I won the race because of the Hercules. I came up on first place from behind, and we got to that obstacle at the same time, and I beat him through it and charged ahead with just barely a little bit of seconds between us. So
it was fun to see you at the spear throw as an official.
Watching I was hurting at the spear throw. Did you know at that race... I had only been cleared to run for 2.5 weeks before that race.
Was that because of the frostbite?
Yeah, because I got frostbite
on my toes. That's a whole other podcast, man.
Yeah, I got frostbite on my toes, got cleared to run, and I was like, I'm racing. I'm getting into this. So I was not in shape, and that was a huge mental battle because I wrote myself off the podium entirely and then was able to just slowly work my way back in with obstacle efficiency and things like that. So,
okay, for reals, last thing.
Okay.
And until the next time, maybe.
Yeah.
You and I have talked about people that we mutually respect. You've met quite a few of them in person, spent some time with them.
Yeah.
I've just heard them or watched them or seen them.
Yeah.
Who's somebody in your Spartan experience, as a pro athlete, as an elite athlete that you've met, and there's probably a few of them, but just one that you would share with us today. So we're not saying this is the only one, or there are others, but somebody that you really respect and why.
Okay. Well, yeah, I think you and I had talked about this earlier, but there's a guy, his Instagram handle is Trailmaster Heyman. His name is Steve Heyman. He's an employee of Spartan Race, actually, and a great competitor. He races a lot, too. But he, early on, was in charge of course design and course setup. And then he has this killer personality and this beautiful accent from the UK. And so he started getting on the camera a little bit more. So all of a sudden, this guy is a super famous course designer and personality of Spartan Race. But the reason I respect him is because even when I was a nobody in terms of my competitiveness, I got a chance to volunteer under his crew, and he was awesome to everybody. He listened to everybody. He's kind to everybody. He treated each person, whether you are a pro or a volunteer, with equality. And there's just something about him. Like, there's this, you could tell this guy was just a kind and caring individual. And so I see him, still you see him out there on Spartan courses, and he's just loved by everybody. Everyone who meets this guy loves him. And the reason is because he is kind and caring to everybody he meets, and he's just fun to be around. That inspires me because I think that's a good picture of what good ministry should be like. Hmm. And not necessarily that like we should all strive to be the person with the most charisma in the room or a great talent, right? Because talent and charisma isn't ministry. I think being the kind of person who engages every person in every walk of life and looks them in the eyes and spends quality time listening to them and caring about them, that's ministry. And this individual has proven that in the way that he cares for all the people that participate in his races. So, yeah, look up to him a lot.
Awesome. Well, Grayson, thanks for the time that you spent with me today.
Yeah.
More conversations, and I'll see you Wednesday morning at 7 a.m.
Yes, sir. Sounds fun.
All right, bro. Thanks.
Yep.
Thanks for listening to the Because Church Suite podcast. I hope you were inspired in some way by this episode. Do you have a question for Because or want to partner together to alleviate poverty? Visit us online at becauseinternational.org. Until next time, remember, small things can make a big difference.